Cache number 17965, Sergeant Major Frederick Beadle, Reel 11.
Sergeant Major Beadle, Reel 11. How did you find the conscripts as trainees? What was their overall general level of fitness compared to that of the TA and the reservists?
I found them a mixed bag, really. There was the percentage who took the attitude, well, I've been called up, I've got to do it for 2 years, I might just, well, make the best of it. They were all right. Then there was a percentage who came in and said, I don't want to do this, I ain't going to do more than I want to do. They were all wrong. So it upset the apple cart a bit. And it didn't rest with private soldiers. Even some of the officers, in my way of thinking, had the wrong attitude. I remember one in particular who said something out of turn, and I had a word with him because he was in the gymnasium and under my jurisdiction, and his attitude was, oh, I've only got a few more weeks to do, why should I worry? That was the wrong attitude. And if it's with the then short-term service officers, it's passed down the ranks and you get people following on. If it's right for the officer, it's right for us. So, as I say, it was a mixed bag. Fortunately, I think there were more of them who were willing to make a go of it and get as much enjoyment out of it as they could than the bolshy ones, who were just a damn nuisance from the start to finish.
Was there anything you could do to reduce the influence of the bolshy ones or to change their attitude?
Not really. They've got that attitude. The right thing to do was what I did, I think. I just ignored them. If they stepped out of line, they were put on the charge, same as anybody else, of course. But show them no favours or anything like that. They were just treated as one of 40 or however many it was in the squad they were in.
Have you any idea of roughly, you know, what proportion of the conscripts were bolshy?
Fifteen percent.
Yeah,
I wouldn't think of any more than that. There were more good ones than bad ones.
You've been describing the mental condition of the conscripts and their attitude. What about their physical condition?
Oh, physically, I would say they were good in most cases. But those who were physically unfit were people like who had flat feet, curly toes, scoliosis, lordosis. But they catered for those because they had special units. For instance, they had one in Satan Camp Chester where they had four companies and each gymnasium, there's four main gymnasiums, each gymnasium had something like one warrant officer and eight other ranks of PT Corps status, which is sergeant and above. And one company would treat people with a foot problem, the other company would treat people with a lordosis problem, the other lot would do exercises to treat them for scoliosis, and so it went on. So instead of saying, well, you're no good, you've got this wrong with you, you've got flat feet, or you've got your knocked knee or what have you, they tried to improve their physique so that they could stay on and still do their training.
What is lordosis?
A curvature of the spine.
Can
scoliosis
be?
Or lordosis.
Yes.
They're all curvatures of the spine. The one was the humpty back.
Yes.
One is the hollow back.
Yes.
The other is the looking at it from the back, where it
zigzags
a little bit. Mm.
And is it possible to correct those conditions by exercises? And
I'm not really in a position to say that or to answer that, because it wasn't my say-so whether they'd done enough training in there. There was an officer attached to each gymnasium as well, and they were medical officers. They did all the inspecting. They would have kept the records for the number of people they considered fit enough to remain and do their training.
What about the flat feet?
Flat feet, I don't think there were many people with flat feet who in the end didn't do their training. Most of them did. I think that would be exceptionally bad, the flat feet, to be snug out, so to speak.
Now, when you were dealing with your TA men in the London Rifle Brigade, these were, you were saying, prosperous people who'd been able to take
most of them were very intelligent people.
Yeah, active leisure pursuits, so they were reasonably fit. Your reservists, regular reservists, would have been men who'd been fit at one time and rather let themselves go a bit. Conscripts coming in from all quarters. Did you find that it took longer to get conscripts up to the requisite level of military fitness than it did your reservists? Or did it take the same length of time, roughly?
I think with the conscripts compared to the reservists, were fitter. Because you've got to take into consideration the reservists would be older. They would have completed 1 year as a regular soldier.
Yes.
And they would be on so many years of reserve. They'd be called up there so many years of reserve. So, averagely speaking, I suppose, the reservist you get is somewhere about 30, average is out about 30 years their age, compared with the conscript who comes in at 18 or 17, whichever the case was. I can't remember exactly what it was now. Was it 17 or 18?
I think it was 18.
18, I think, that's it. Yeah. But they would come in at age 18, compared with the reservists who had done a stint, got out on reserve and been called back again, and would probably be 30 or even more years old. For instance, I signed on for 9 years with the colours and 3 in reserve. That 9 years with the colours started at 18 years of age. So I was 27 years of age before I could get out. Then I got a bit of reservist to cat on that. So, as I said in the first place, one would be somewhere about 30 years of age if it was a reservist, because it doesn't matter how they were reserved. If they joined up the same day as me, they joined up for 7 years with the colours and 5 with the reserve, it would affect them that way exactly the same.
It's often said that if you're thinking about physical condition, young men have the advantage of speed, but older men have an advantage of endurance. Do you think that's true?
It is true to a point. I think you can't say that ad lib. From my experience, I've found that younger ones, coming in at 18, for instance, the ones who are keen to do well, they really get stuck in and do things. They get fit pretty quick, there's no doubt about that. After all, since they've been away from school for long, where they play games, for instance. So they're reasonably fit. But when you say the reservists are stronger because of their age, the reason I have a bit of doubt about that is that I feel that the average person is strongest when he's between sort of 25 and 30. And once he gets over 30, he starts going downhill a bit.
I was thinking more of endurance than of strength.
Yeah, even with endurance. I think once they start getting over 30, they start finding things a bit tough. I don't know if I've mentioned it before, but pre-war, if you were 30 years of age in the regiment, you wasn't compelled to do PT. He was considered an old man at 30 years of age. So whoever got those figures out, they must have had something to give them some idea of the figures.
Do you know when that policy changed?
As soon as the war started. It didn't matter what age they were then, they jolly well got out there and did it. But it was a tough guy for some of the poor chaps.
So you had a, you said you had a year at Budbrook. From what you were saying, it sounds like that was a happy year at Budbrook.
Budbrook Barracks?
Yes.
Yes, very, very...
Warwick's.
Yes, yes. I really enjoyed it because there was plenty of work to do. I had a good gymnasium, good training officer. CO was interested. I had contraptions all round the depot for obstacle course, and it didn't matter. It was a very pleasant time. And while there, I had the honour of shaking hands with Mr. Eden, which was very pleasing.
How did that happen?
He was an ex-Warwick officer. Well, and his estate is up there, isn't it? Anthony Eden, poor old chap. He's gone now, of course. But, I put that in as a bit of a game, really.
He was saying that you were moving around with the London Rifle Brigade at the time of Dunkirk and so forth. At that time, did you ever think that it was really likely that the Germans would invade?
Well, at that time, one couldn't help thinking that it was a possibility that they would do. Because, let's face up to that, once they got to Dunkirk, they marched through other countries like a hot knife going through butter, didn't they? I mean, there was no stopping them. They had things that we didn't seem to have. Yes, I certainly thought there was a possibility of it. And, I mean, it was obvious we weren't being moved around the country for nothing. It was all costing time and money. But you can imagine all these regiments all skittered about all over the country, because we wouldn't be the only regiment that was doing this. It must have been a very confusing state of affairs.
Now, the DCLI 2nd Battalion had been on the continent and had been involved in the retirement back to Dunkirk. Had you kept in touch with the DCLI when you'd been transferred to the PT Corps?
I didn't keep in touch.
You didn't?
No. No, it was a period of time finish. There was nothing to keep in touch for except friendship.
Yes. Well, I wondered if you'd been in touch by letter with any of your old friends in the... Not by letter.
But I did meet a couple... During my tour of the Middle East.
Yes.
Cherby Holt.
Yes.
He came there with the band. So I met him in the Middle East. And that was about the only one, I think. But in other words, there was no point in keeping in touch. As far as I was concerned, I had a different job to do, and jolly well got on with it, really.
What was your social life when you were with the Warwicks? Were you living in the sergeant's mess, or...?
In the sergeant's mess, yes. And in married quarters. And I was looked after very well. Yeah.
Where did you go then after the Warwicks? What was your next move?
I went to Birmingham. Now, I've got to think here. I can't remember the name of the unit I went to. It was a military unit that was responsible for training reservists and what have you in the area, and people who were stationed in the area doing courses. For instance, is it Lucas of Birmingham? They have a big factory there, and some of their trades coincided with the trades that were needed in the army, so they were sent there in courses. The post office at Ashton, that was quite a big post office. They had people working in doing a course in the post office so that they could go out in the field and deal with the post. very important part of the job. I didn't have long there, fortunately. I was there about, offhand, 8 weeks, 9 weeks.
Why do you say fortunately? Didn't you enjoy
it? I didn't like it.
What was wrong with it?
Well, you wasn't in control of anything. I was in a civvy billet, and I would have to go to wherever the men were doing their course and take them. It was all right in Lucas's. I did it on top of the roof. We had a flat roof, and I'd got them up there. But another group, the mail side of it, the post office side of it, them I took in a graveyard. It was a case of going out to these people, all by bus. One didn't have cars and things in those days. So it wasn't really my idea of an army job. And it's not going to be saying I liked it, I didn't. And from there I went to Coventry and did something similar.
Who was actually commanding you when you were doing these jobs? Because you must have been reporting to somebody.
Well, I was an individual in the regiment, and I reported to the training officer. Then I got on with things.
But when you were in Birmingham, I mean, did you have a headquarters too?
Oh, yes. I can't remember the name of it now. Yes. It was... and the one in Coventry was the same sort of thing. I'm sorry, my memory won't give me the name that I want.
Did you have any staff to help you in these jobs?
Not one. No, it was just a lonely job.
What about when you were with the Warwicks? Did you have assistants there?
Yeah, I had a staff of 8 there in the gymnasium. Mm. Yes. Same as anywhere else, where it was a depot, they'd be assistant instructors, you see. They still carried on the assistant instructors' courses during the war at Aldershot, and also other main places, such as Salisbury or Tidworth, for instance, where I did a course. They had a gymnasium, they had staff with PT Corps men to train up assistant instructors. They go back, they'd be a lance corporal or a corporal, and assist the army physical training chap who's attached to the regiment.
When you were doing this training, particularly if you were dealing with conscripts, how did you actually assess them and measure their performance? And what sort of levels did they have to reach to satisfy your requirements? That they were fit.
We never did test them, except with the tests that they had to pass once a year. Again, I'll go back to the old thing, 3 miles in such and such a time, jump so high and so long, throw something a certain distance. The only sort of means that one had. Actually, in most cases, I think that you didn't have them long enough to train them right out of fitness, because they were moved around just as quickly as anybody else during the war. But we didn't really have a proper measurement system going at that time, except for the exercises which they should be capable of doing after the training.
Did the PT Corps try to produce a standardised program for training conscripts?
There wasn't a program, but there was the PT tables.
Yes. What were those like? Tell me about those.
The PT tables were all freestanding exercises, so you didn't need any equipment, you could do it anywhere. And I think I'm right in saying there were 6 tables. And they were different exercises at each table, and they would go in the sequence of arm, shoulder, trunk, leg. Balance, arm, shoulder, trunk, leg. So you got right the way through the body in the course of time with this particular table. And each table would be slightly harder than the preceding one, so that you're building them up slowly from a simple sort of half an hour's work on a table, to a more strenuous one at the end of the line.
Would it be made more difficult by introducing new movements, or would it be by increasing the number of repetitions?
By increasing
the number of repetitions.
Oh yes.
Or would it be new exercises? Or
usually the you'd have table one.
Yes.
Table two, table three, and each one would be successfully a little bit harder physically than the one preceding it. Most of these tables that you did would take up the average time that you would get a chap in the gymnasium for. You see, the chap going on PT, you'd be interworked with other platoons. So it's one platoon on PT, one platoon on rifle drill, one platoon on something else. So then at the end of the session, which was normally about 40 minutes, there'd be a change round. So you'd find you just probably just had time to get through a table in the time that you was given to have the squad there.
So the squad would arrive. Would they arrive changed for PT, or would they have to change after they arrived?
That varied a bit, of course, because it wasn't every unit that had a gymnasium. But where they had a gymnasium, they changed in the quite big changing room to all these gymnasiums there were then. But if they were out in the field a bit, there was no gymnasium, of course the sensible thing for them to do is, if they were under canvas or what have you, is to change and then come onto PT. So it was dressed according to the circumstances, I suppose.
Did the tables include a warm-up, or did that...
Well, that all fitted in with your arm, shoulder, trunk, leg.
Yes.
So you could have done. I mean, there was nothing to stop you doing a quarter of an hour sort of running, walking, jumping, tagging, what have you, and then go onto your table. But by putting them onto a table, you were sure that you were going to get them generally fit and not just partly fit.
Yes. Do you remember any of the tables at all? Could you quote me table number one, for example?
I could show you, say, most of it. Now, number one table, to the best of my memory, would be arm and shoulders. Oh, this one there.
So arm swinging, forward,
arm,
and side,
shoulder,
and round and arms, round.
I've used the shoulders as well as the arms.
Yes.
All right. Then it's trunk.
So trunk rotating or bending.
That's right, bending. You increase on that when you're getting up to table six.
Yes.
Trunk, then you're using the trunk with your trunk.
Hands on the hips, yes.
Leg, bend the knees.
Bending the knees and raising the heels.
And then in the second half, you would just increase on that type of exercise.
Yes.
Which is getting you up to an easy stage to the second table number two.
Yes.
And then the same thing would be given until you got to the end of the table, if you had them that long.
Yeah.
Which during the war, 9 times out of 10, you wouldn't.
Yes. So, I mean, where did you introduce things like press-ups and sit-ups? And
yes.
Did that come in early or later?
Oh, no, that would come in there. It would be in the second lot of arm, shoulder, trunk, leg.
Yes.
I mean, you'd be press ups with your arms and shoulders, and your trunk, of course, you sitting up, lying back, sitting up, lying back.
Yeah.
And your leg, well, it's legs, isn't it?
Yes. How many press ups would you expect them to do when you started off with them?
Well, there's not a definite answer for that.
Mm.
If you've got any cinch, you keep them at it as long as you think they're fit enough to do it. Whereas you get one squad better than another and could do more than the other. But
when you were doing the table, did it say 15 press-ups, or did it say 1 minute of press-ups, or something like that?
No, it just tells you the exercise and you decide.
I see.
How many times they do this or that.
Yes.
All they do in the tables is to they illustrate it very briefly, and then they have little matchstick men
showing you what to do.
Yes.
So you'd had a good experience with the London Rifle Brigade, another good experience with the Warwicks, then you went to Birmingham and Coventry.
Yeah.
What happened after that?
Went to the Middle East.
You went to the Middle East. How much warning did you have you were going to go to the Middle East?
Oh, I can't remember. I'm sorry, I can't remember how much warning, but I had plenty of warning.
Did you volunteer for it, or were you just posted?
No. No, I didn't volunteer. With mixed feelings about that, because I felt at one stage, after I'd been in the PT Corps a bit, that as a regular soldier, I wasn't doing my bit. I didn't think being a sergeant in the PT Corps was the right thing to be doing after 9 years in the infantry. So I did have a little period where I was a little bit, shall I, shan't I?
What were you thinking of doing? Were you thinking of applying to go back to the infantry?
Go back to the regiment. Yes. And then when we got to the Middle East, the draft I was on, they wanted a number of us to transfer to the airborne, which I volunteered for. And I busted my leg in training, so I was taken off. And although I tried hard enough, I tried time and time again to persuade them to let me go to the airborne. In the end, they got fed up with me and said that if I particularly wanted to go, I'd have to dip a rank. In other words, I was a WO. I would have to give him my WO rank and resume to a sergeant. Well, as a regular soldier, I wasn't going to do that. So I was stuck.
Were you planning to go to the airborne as a PT instructor or as a
PT instructor with you? I mean, naturally, being airborne, they had to be physically fit.
Yes.
And they had more instructors per battalion than most of the others, I suppose. I don't know that definitely because I've never seen the figures. But yes. That's just my imagination.
So you volunteered for airborne. Where was that? Was that when you were in the Middle East?
When I was in the Middle East, yes. So what happened? We got to the Middle East and we were taken to a depot which was midway between Portshead and Port Suez.
Yes.
And it was there, after we'd been there a couple of days, that we were phoned up and they asked for any of us who would like to go to the airborne. And it was taken from there.
Where did you go once you've been... Where did they take you when you volunteered for airborne?
I was still stayed there.
You still stayed there?
Yeah, until such times as there was a transport or what have you to go to the unit they were sending you to, I suppose.
And did you... How did you break your leg? Was that when you were with the airborne, or was it before?
No, I didn't get to the airborne.
You didn't get to
the airborne? No, that was the niggly part about it. I busted my knee, actually. I didn't break it, but I busted it pretty badly, and it was a huge size. And I finished up at convalescent depot at El Balar, again on the canal.
How did you actually get this injury? What were you doing when it happened?
I was jumping. I did a balance, yes, and a jump down of about 12 or 14 feet into a so-called sand pit. But there was bricks in the sand pit as well. And I landed on one of those, which I didn't realise was there. It's under the sand. And I caught my foot wrong on there as I landed. It just threw things sideways.
How How long did it take you to recover from that injury? It
took a long time. I was sent to the number 2 convalescent depot, not as a patient, but I went there even with my bad leg as an instructor. But here again, this is where we started meeting up with people with something wrong with them. I mean, over and above curvatures of spines and what have you, there was wounds that were repairing and restricted movements in some way or the other. And we used to take these lads every day, again, under the supervision of a medical officer, and give them the necessary treatment to try and improve their mobility of their particular problem.
Did you have to have surgery on your knee?
No, I didn't. It was a question of rest more than anything else. Taking people in exercises like that, I wasn't doing much jumping about. I couldn't have done any jumping about anyway.
But, what had you actually done? Was it ligaments or cartilage?
It was ligament, actually. Ligaments. Yeah.